Time to find a little peace of mind. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry today, and our next guest is here to teach us a little bit about hygge, including how to pronounce it. It is an Scandinavian idea, as I understand it, and it is going to help us get through the winter, we all hope. Our guest is Klaus E. Andersen, an associate professor of Scandinavian studies and the head of the Nordic unit in the German, Nordic, and Slavic department at UW-Madison. And if you have questions about this concept of coziness called hygge, you can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And Klaus, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's start with pronunciation here. This concept of coziness, how do you pronounce it?
Hygge.
Hygge.
Hygge. And the pronunciation is rather important, because part of doing hygge is also invoking the term. So when you are hygging, you in a Danish context, and this is where the concept originates, you use the word quite a lot. So in Danish, you will find hygge both as a verb, as a noun, and as an adjective. So it's being used quite a lot. So it's a good idea to try to pronounce it a few times, hygge.
There are a very few words I can think of in the English language that can be used that way, and the ones that I can think of cannot be said on the radio. But also, when I'm saying hygge, Klaus, I also feel like a breath to it, like there is an actual physical response in saying it, that it's a very breathy word.
Yes, and in a Danish context, you often use it as a reflexive noun. Oh, sorry, a reflexive verb. And a reflexive verb, right, it's something where a verb, just to be a little grammatical here, right? Mm-hmm. It needs an object.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, the word itself both turns us inwards and outwards. It needs someone to talk to. So in the word itself, there's also a social aspect, right? It's about being with others in the moment.
Klaus, you grew up in Denmark, right?
I did, yes.
So, and this is where hygge originated.
This is where hygge originated, yes.
Tell us about how it came to be in Denmark first, before we find out how it came overseas.
Well, the word itself, hygge, or as an adjective, hyggeligt, is something we can actually trace back all the way to Old Norse and the Viking Age. and then it kind of moved through the Scandinavian languages, and especially Danish and Norwegian. Mm-hmm. But in the late 19th century, in the wake of what's called the Second Schleswig War, where Denmark was humiliated and lost a third of its population and its territory to Prussia, and Otto von Bismarck, the word changed its meaning, because in the aftermath of that war, where everything was desolate, right, being humiliated, the motto became, what outwardly has been lost, inwardly shall be gained. So Danes turned their backs to the rest of the world and were like, we're good enough the way we are. And this is where hygge, in its contemporary meaning, starts coming to existence, meaning pleasant togetherness, where Danes got together with their back against the world. And if we then extend that to an English-speaking context, right, it's really interesting that when hygge made its way to the English-speaking world, it first came to the UK in 2015. That was the year of Brexit.
Oh, wow.
And then the year after, we see all the books, the social media posts coming to the U.S., and that was the year of Donald Trump's first election, right, at a time where he ran specifically on an isolationism platform for the U.S.
So here is this concept of pleasant togetherness, of inner and encompassing coziness, and it comes about in ways that it almost feels like it was a coping mechanism or a need at the time for the Danish people after a loss in the war, for questions about the uncertainty in Brexit and questions about what was to come with a disruption of the Donald Trump presidency.
Yes, and I think you have that right in the definition that you used there as well, pleasant togetherness, right? Because pleasant is completely unassuming, right? Pleasant is about relaxing, being calm. It is not something, it does not ask you to be extraordinary, right? It's just pleasant.
Yeah.
And togetherness is also just like, we have to just be together in a pleasant environment.
But how does that square with inner coziness, or this concept of, you know, the warm blanket of hygge?
Well, the way hygge has been oftentimes promoted mm-hmm. or used on social media in the U.S., right, has been very much tied to materialism. and materialism, right, this there where you have the candles, you have the blankets, you have the hot drinks. These things can help lower the threshold to achieve hygge, right, the cozy togetherness, but they are not needed. Hygge is not
Are you
about
sure?
Yes. Yeah. But I will say, right, in my family here in Wisconsin,
yeah.
Right, we have candles on the dining room table every day from mid-October to April, right? Because what candles do, and I said they lower the threshold.
Yeah.
It creates a cozy, warm atmosphere, yeah. and it makes you want to sit at the dining room table maybe 5 minutes later, right? I have kids that are teenagers, so maybe 30 seconds later is all we can get. But it makes a difference, right? It invites you in, makes you want to stay a little longer.
Why is this pleasant togetherness, this coziness, if you go, why is this such a winter thing when it could be a year-round idea?
Well, in Denmark, you can have coziness or hygge all year round. Danes will insist that they can sit out on the porch in these long summer nights where it never really gets dark. But there's something about the time of year, right, when it gets cold and mm-hmm. Dark, that we want to cozy up inside. And what hygge then becomes a coping mechanism to
yes.
that, right? It becomes a way for us to say, I don't have to fight this, right? I can embrace it and I can take this to an opportunity to spend time with people I love and with friends and family.
I love that idea. So Klaus Andersen, our guest, Associate Professor of Scandinavian Studies and head of the Nordic Unit in the German, Nordic, and Slavic Department here at UW-Madison, inviting you to this conversation of hygge at 1-800-642-1234 or email us talk@wpr.org. How would I begin to practice hygge here with, wind chills dipping to as low as 40 below tonight? How do I find that warmth and coziness, Klaus?
Well, I think one of the things that we tend to do here in Wisconsin, right, when it gets dark outside, we turn the lights up.
Mm.
And I like to talk about the first time I visit my in-laws and we were having dinner. And my father-in-law turned on the lights over the dining room table, what I've then since have referred to as the stadium lighting, right?
Yes.
Four 100-watt light bulbs, right? That killed all the atmosphere. And I think that's what we tend to do in Wisconsin, whereas the concept of hygge asks us to do something else, right? Embrace the darkness. Turn it down a little bit, right? Find a sort of comfort in the weather and don't necessarily try to fight it because you're going to lose that fight.
Fighting is the wrong way to go about hygge.
Fighting is the wrong way of doing it,
embracing
yes.
is probably a step
embracing
in the right
and then spending time with others, right? Invite people into your home, spend time with them. Another thing we do in my family, and I think that might be the best example of hygge that I can come up with,
mm-hmm.
and it is something that I often, when I talk about hygge, mention, and because it's such a good example, we do every weekend, year round, mostly in the winter though, we have what we call afternoon snack or afternoon coffee,
uh-huh.
eftermiddagskaffe, where we get together for a few minutes in the afternoon. Like kids might be spread different places mm-hmm. in the house. My wife and I might be doing our separate things, but then we get together. My wife and I might have a cup of coffee. We might have a cookie or a cracker, something rather unassuming, but we get together for a few minutes. And just sitting there, breathing together, maybe talking. Sometimes it can last 2 minutes. Sometimes we get the kids to say, stay 10 minutes, right?
Sure.
It is that togetherness, this taking the effort of spending time with the people you love, your family and your friends, and also then insisting that it's okay to have a break. And I think in the way we live, our lives in the U.S. today, right? Brakes are not okay. Everything's have to be optimized, right? Everything has to. We have
make
to
the
produce.
Most of every moment. Yes.
We have to network. We have to do everything, right? Even our leisure time is about optimizing. I have to run faster. I have to do all these things.
Or the checking your phone.
You or gotta, checking your phone.
Yes.
Right?
What's going on in my phone?
Yeah. Hygge asks the opposite. Mm. Let's take a deliberate break.
This is not the first winter I've heard of Hygge, but Klaus, I'm so glad you're here because I think the aspect that I've been missing about this is the social aspect of the interconnections with others, that loved ones and friends and family, and having this opportunity in the dead of winter to find life with the folks that you love being with.
Yeah, and we know, right, this is what all research tells us, is that one of the hardest things, right, in terms of our health and depression is loneliness, right?
Yeah.
If we wanna be happy, we have to spend time with other people. But it's so hard in our busy lives.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Hygge can come in and be a way of for us to insist on being with other people. But it's also something that is demanding, right? Because spending time with others, reaching out, insisting on the togetherness, it takes an effort.
Yes, but that effort is combating loneliness, which can be, you know, a sickness. It can be a disease.
Yeah.
And I just think I've been looking for it in candles and blankets, and I'm going to find it in friends and loved ones.
I mean, and another thing to do, right? I mean, I'm as bad at this as everyone, right? I use my phone as much. I eat my lunch often alone in front of my computer. And this is the wrong approach, right? We need to reach out. We need to ask a colleague, a friend, could we sit and eat together? Should we drink a cup of coffee together? Insist on those breaks during the day. That is, I think, the message of Hygge.
I think I'm starting to Hygge.
Yes.
Right. I'm feeling it. Klaus, let's go to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234. You can also give us an email, talk@wpr.org. Gary and Madison, we'll go to you. Good afternoon.
Hello. I wonder if your guest could distinguish between Hygge and probably the more well-known German term, Gemütlichkeit.
Ah, oh. That is really interesting. First of all, may I just, your pronunciation of Hygge there was just spot on. So that was really...
You didn't say that to me, Klaus. I'm working on it.
I'll say it afterwards. There are some different, right? And I think you make a good point. You have Gemütlichkeit. You have other terms in a number of languages that seem to designate some of the same. What is different from Hygge is that you invoke the term while you perform Hygge, right? That saying the word is a way of invoking the concept. And that's not something you do with Gemütlichkeit. But you certainly have some of the same aspects there as well. Another difference, I think, is that Hygge, if we want to take it on a little more global perspective, is also something that is tied to Danish nationalism or Danish sense of how they see themselves. And I don't see Gemütlichkeit as something that is connected to Germanness in the same name way. I hope that answered the question.
And isn't that part of the beauty of the English language, is we've just taken all the other languages and co-opted the words that we wanted to use, or the language of other countries as they fit our culture?
English is not alone there. Many languages steal from other languages, right? For the kind of words that you needed at certain points. But I'm very happy to see that Hygge makes its way in here, and I hear more and more people use the term. But I just want to say, I mean, Hygge is not about the social media moments that you often find on Instagram and other places. You might actually say that if you try to make an Instagrammable moment, then it's not Hygge, right? Because then you spend more time on the performance than actually embracing the pleasant togetherness.
The moment, right?
The moment,
and there is something about the moment that is, and I think, you know, If you asked a physicist, the only thing that actually exists is the moment. The rest is what we project into the future. The rest is what we remember from the past. The rest is the imagination. But what is real is right now.
It is right now, yes.
And there is a place for Hygge in that moment.
Yes.
Still haven't said it right. Got an email from Lynn here who says they are of Danish descent and have been learning about Hygge since COVID. Lynn wants to know, is it true the Danes burn more candles per capita than any other country? Also, are the candles mostly unscented? Lynn said they recently learned about Louis Poulsen, a famous lighting architect, and says lighting sets the ambience for Hygge.
Oh, that's a great question. I have not seen the statistics that Danes burn more candles than others, but I would not be surprised. I have lived in other Scandinavian countries too, and I have never seen as many candles as I do in Denmark. And you see them everywhere, in supermarkets, in convenience stores. You can buy candles everywhere, and they're relatively cheap, and they are almost always unscented. So they don't create an ambience through the smell in your room. However, in the last 10 years, there's been a drop in the sales of candles in Denmark because there has been some studies that have shown that some of the smoke from the candles is not good for the indoor climate.
Sure.
That they can actually be a little unhealthy. And what you have seen then, you have seen an uptick in of people using electric LED candles instead. But still, when I visit friends, when I visit families, when I go to events in Denmark, candles are always on the table. You go to a restaurant in Denmark, you will almost always find a lit candle. So candles are everywhere. And I remember seeing recently a figure for how many candles Danes burned on average a year, and it was surprisingly high. Whether it's the highest in the world, I can't say, though.
Also, are you familiar with Louis Poulsen, the lighting architect?
Yes. There are a number of different lighting architects. Louis Poulsen is one of them. That's the producer. And Louis Poulsen produces a number of Paul Henningsen's lamps. And there you have a lamp that is called PH5. Paul Henningsen 5, which is a lamp he designed in the late 20s. And what's unique about this lamp is something you can hang over your dining room table is that it gives a completely even indirect lighting.
It's not the stadium lighting.
It is not the stadium lighting. And it is, despite the fact that it is, I think, about $1,000 for this lamp, it is the most sold lamp in Denmark. And you see it over thousands of dining room tables because it gives that indirect, inviting light that Danes seek to create an atmosphere that they can call hygge.
Klaus, I can't help but notice that the United Nations World Happiness Report ranks Danes among the happiest people on Earth year in and year out. And, you know, from your experience and from your background and from what we're learning about Hygge today, why is that? Why are the Danes so happy, content, and fulfilled in their lives?
Well, let's just get a misunderstanding out of the way here, right? I mean, if you go to Denmark, it is not like you meet Danes smiling and happy. And
it's not like a small world after all,
no,
right?
I mean, as an expat, I've been fortunate to often go back during the summer.
Yeah.
And during the summer, yes, people are smiley. But I was there in early November, and it's rainy, and it's dark, and it's windy, and people are grumpy. And you don't sense that people are necessarily happy. So the happiness is not necessarily something that is
they're not
is
singing
visible.
And dancing down the street in the middle of a rainstorm.
But one of the things that creates this happiness among Danes, right, it's because that we have something that is also structural here. There's structural differences. There's the welfare state. There's the paid vacation. There's the paid family leave. There is an insistence in the everyday life on taking these breaks, right, that you have a work-life balance.
That isn't just something that people choose. It's actually built into the Danish system.
Right? Yes, right? Most people, I mean, go home from work at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The work week is a little shorter than it is here. You have up to 5 weeks of vacation a year. And you don't necessarily have some of the same worries you do here with healthcare, because that is taken care of, right? And that's why you see typically many of the Scandinavian countries at the top of the UN World Happiness Report.
It's not just a state of mind, it's the state of the state.
It is the state of the state, right? But there's, of course, there's a connection between these things as well. And the pleasant togetherness, the fact that you get to spend time with friends and family adds to this feeling as well.
So we could increase our happiness quotient here in the United States through building a better state, through building a state that focuses more on a work-life balance that helps people in getting through and paying for their livelong days.
At least if you have some structures, right, that encourage togetherness and friendship and community, because those are the things that we know that increases the happiness.
Finally, Klaus, how can we here in Wisconsin, in the middle of winter, embrace and incorporate hygge into our everyday lives? What would you recommend?
I would recommend taking the small breaks, spending time with others, insisting that it's okay to sit down and relax without an agenda, without needing a reason to do so. That, I think, is what we can learn.
And we'll be hygging our way through the winter, and we'll get to spring at some point, eventually.
Eventually.
I want to thank you because for me, hygge was, I think you've dispelled some myths for me here. I think it was, for me, a warm blanket and a candle. It was something external. And the first thing you said to me is how we say the word actually invokes this feeling, and it becomes a breath, that and it becomes social, that it becomes other people. That is the important element of hygge that I may have been missing all along.
And let me just stress once again, right? The material, like the candles, the blankets, they can lower the threshold, but they're not needed.
They're not the hygge I'm looking for.
No.
You are. Klaus Anderson, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure, and we may call on you again as the winter continues on. May need a little bit of a reminder about where we can find hygge in our everyday life here in Wisconsin.
Thank you for having me.
Klaus Anderson, Associate Professor of Scandinavian Studies and the head of the Nordic Unit in German, Nordic, and Slavic Department at the UW-Madison. When we continue, Don Vruink joins us. He is Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads, and we all have a role to play in keeping our railroads safe. We'll talk with Don when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today, and you are listening to The Larry Mueller Show.